SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
If you're listening to SiriusXM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. And a very happy new year. Let me get this out because I know what happens invariably at the end of the show. I forget, even if I've got it written down. Happy, healthy new year. And of course, this evening, sundown, Shana Tova. Happy, healthy. One of the advantages of being Jewish is that you get to get rid of this year, you know, 3.5 months early. Yeah, exactly, right. I will admit I'm going to have to get out in front of this. I'm a little on the behind side. I'm a little verklempt, a little disorganized. I've been cooking and I've been seized with the need and the urge, even though it'll just be Tina and I, you know, it's festive. It's supposed to, you know, there's certain traditional kind of types of things, and you know, we'll do tashlik, which is I've introduced to Tina. She kind of likes it, and you go to a body of moving water, you know, brook. Crick, as they call it in upstate New York. Anything where water is moving. There's actually, in Schuylerville, there's a nice spillway that goes through, actually goes right behind the Schuyler Mansion, which, for those that don't know, Alexander Hamilton was married to Schuyler, Philip Schuyler's daughter, and Hamilton used to visit there often and would go up into the attic and read candlelight. It's kind of a night owl, and so it's pretty cool. The Schuyler House, which also has sort of a haunted vibe to it a little bit. They used to do things with Halloween, and it's pretty cool. Actually, I haven't been in a while, but we'll go this afternoon behind it, and where there's a bridge in the water. So you take a loaf of old bread and you tear off pieces and you throw it into the water, and they represent, you know, misdeeds and you know, poorly constructed pick five tickets, and you wish them away, and you send them off so as not to burden you into the new year. And you know, I've kind of taught Tina, you make nice, you know, wishes for good health and so forth for friends and family. So we'll do tashlik, and I've got a brisket. I've got a brisket they had to bring in with a crane. I kid you not. It is a 6-pound brisket that is just gorgeous from Denny Ushak. Denny cut it for me fresh yesterday. So it's been seasoned. We'll do it, and we'll braise it over onions, and forget it. And the kugel. You can't forget that dry cheese noodle kugel that just kills. I put that up on Facebook, actually, for everybody, for those of you. And for those of you that have never had a kugel, you're missing out. You don't, you know, it's not a necessity. You don't have to get a bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah or have a bris to enjoy a kugel. And particularly this one. This is the greatest of all. The mother of all kugels. So anyway, I'm going to cook the rest of the afternoon, even though I've already handicapped and written up the Belmont opening day. We'll talk to Dave Grenig in about 15 minutes. We'll start the coverage, and we'll start the Belmont fall season, which for a long time was known as the fall championship meet. And it's a little less championship-ish. However, there should be some very good racing the next 2 months leading toward Ford Breeders' Cup. And as I mentioned yesterday, there's a ton of maiden action, maiden specials, really all over the place. And wait till Santa Anita gets going next week. No Jay today. I didn't hear from Jay either, so because I figured we'll save it for next week. But Jay, if you're listening, if you're up early, 6 a.m., and he probably is, Happy New Year to Jay as well. I said Dave Grenig. We'll find out from Dave what his wife Beth, what her number one go-to holiday item is. I'm anxious to hear what Dave. I think we'll talk to Mike Welch as well. I reached out to Mike because there is a Belmont Clocker report, and it should be very valuable. In addition to the horses that Mike was clocking at Saratoga all summer and the book of information he's got from July, August at Saratoga, Mike Vesey has been working down at Belmont. And Vesey, you know, we talked to as often as possible. Mike got one of the best eyes around, and he's back working full-time again around the game. And, you know him from Derby lead-ups and from the Suffolk, from Suffolk's closure. Bill Perry's nephew, that's how he was around the game from the time he was young. And he's got a tremendous eye. So Vesey was at Belmont all summer. And so there's going to be countless horses that are going to show up in these Belmont cards that didn't necessarily either race at Saratoga or even work. So they were very quietly out of sight, out of mind down at Belmont. But they were being watched by Mike Vesey. So there should be tremendous information from Mike and Mike. No longer available, right, on ESPN, but available in your Clocker report. So I'm going to expect that we'll hear from Mike Welch today too, and to maybe get a couple of thoughts about what he's been watching, particularly some of the Derby weekend exiters, and Tis the Law in particular, keeping an eye on, who hasn't really done much. They're still kind of wading their way into a decision about Preakness. But there's others, obviously, and there's going to be a huge weekend of racing at Pimlico. Unbelievable. They're going to pack in a dozen stakes or more Friday, Saturday. So what's today? Today, the 18th? Today's the 18th. So 2 weeks from today, we got Black Eyed Susan Day. And starting to watch for those, for some of those races as well. So Dave Grenig to talk about the start of the Belmont season, and tomorrow they didn't get a great turnout for the Oaks race. We mentioned it yesterday with Haskin. That Magic Attitude is the horse to watch from Roy and Gretchen Jackson, making a first North American start for Arnaud Delacour. The rest of that field setting the mood, my friend Paul Pompa. This is a nice, seemingly progressive, late-developing Lee daughter. 140,000 as an OBS two-year-old last year. Luis Saez aboard. Castellano rides that import. And Manny Franco aboard Key Biscayne for Juan Alvarado, coming out of the Saratoga Oaks, and was a very good third, actually, at a nice price. A 28-1 was Key Biscayne. Had been actually sneaky good in the Lake Placid, beaten a length and three quarters. So this is a nice filly, the Arundel homebred. She's a Brethren filly out of a LDK mare. And she's been, when she stretched out to mile and the eighth in the Lake Placid, and then the mile and 3/16, and of course this is a mile and a quarter, that has been to her liking. the Lemon Drop Kid coming in, influence. This filly's moving forward, Key Biscayne. I really hadn't noticed how progressive she is. And you don't have to pay extra or, you know, go get elite performance figures. Listen to her buyer scale. 48, 48, 60, 60, 63. She broke her maiden against Florida Breds off the turf with just a 56 buyer. But that was a five-horse field. Then she picked it back up, getting back on the grass, 76 buyer, 72 buyer, then an 82 and an 83. She's just every single start is getting incrementally better. And she stayed in New York after the Saratoga Oaks. Interesting. Key Biscayne, Manny Franco back aboard, third straight time. There's Niege Blanc, Snow White. Yes, Blanche, White, Neige, Snow. Snow White for Leonard Powell. She comes back after the first North American start, where she was okay in the Del Mar Oaks. So, I mean, you know what? This is actually, I mean, there's not a lot of them, but it's a five-pack, and they're okay. Antoinette coming out of the Saratoga Oaks win. So we'll talk about it with Dave. We'll talk about apparently the Saratoga, the Belmont Derby version is going to be a little more populated and expect a bigger field. But I tell you now, you know, really looking at it for the first time, horse by horse, it's okay. But if that magic attitude, you know, coming out of the, you know, the French Oaks, and, you know, a couple of group ones at Chantilly. So she Galileo filly, she feels like a pretty serious addition to the the North American three-year-old filly set. Good card tomorrow in New York, and we'll take swings. There's plenty at Churchill, too, obviously. I'll talk about opening day, and we're going to visit with Scully. We'll get some Scully opinions. Yesterday at Churchill, as they kicked off the resumption of the meet, I saw a funny thread. Somebody was asking, I guess, were they asking Ed DeRosa, what are you calling this? Is it a resumption? What is it? So, yeah, those two maiden races and the two horses, among the two horses that we brought up, ran very well. The winner, Midnight Ballerina, this was the sibling we mentioned, the half to Miss T2 for Stoneway and Bill Mott and Julian Leperoux aboard. And she was very good. Leperoux handled her confidently. She went off just favored, just a tick under 3-1, paid 760. And the horse of Cherise that I told you about that was the half to Breaking Lucky, Belfiore, ran nicely. Came kind of belatedly under Rafi Bejarano at 10-1 and was third in here. And you had the other Alstall, Tom Amos. Amos's second timer, the only horse that had started, Littlelicious, second in between. So interesting, I did okay there. And the rest, I didn't play the nightcap because the horse that I had mentioned that I was intrigued by in terms of pedigree, the half to Proven Strategies, Neil Howard's and Stoneway, Seasong scratched. So I just watched and then watched as Mark Cassie sent out Hillcroft's first time starter, Seeking Sika, and 20-1, paid 40-40. Yeah. Under the biscuit. Adam Pachisa. And good. The racing looked good from Churchill yesterday. Nice to get back. And there was a nice variety of connections that won. Today we come back and there's another pair. This time the boys, much like yesterday. But this time we got 6.5 furlong, 2-year-old maiden specials. As the 7th and 10th. Yesterday it was the 6th and the 9th, bookending the late pick 4. And there's a good first level allowance in here for mile and an eighth. We'll probably get some last second Friday pushes from from James Scully when he joins us. Woodbine, of course, a big part of the focus this weekend. Ron Gierkink is going to visit, and we'll talk to Ron. We missed him last week when we had the crazy whatever. they never actually told Casey. Comcast, they never really explained what the hell happened last week down there, but we didn't get a chance to talk to Ron, so we'll get some Queen's Plate Day recapping from him, but we'll look to him for the Woodbine Mile, and the Woodbine Mile didn't come up with a big field. You know what I'll do? I'll text Barbara Minchel, and has she made a decision? Anybody see yet if Minchel made a decision about what she's doing with Admiralty Pier? You know, you handicap the two races, Admiralty Pier 10-1 in the Woodbine Mile, 4-1 in the Singspiel, and you know, when you handicap it, I mean, Admiralty Pier, even as the third choice, looked to me to be the horse to beat. So I would think that they'll lean to the Singspiel, but you know, there's other motivations, of course, too, including winning your in stuff and so forth. You know, $1 million purse versus $125,000 purse in the Grade 3 Singspiel, and you know, the distance, and so on and so forth. So we're either going to have 8 or 7 in the Woodbine Mile. And, of course, Cassie, very much the focus, inside, outside, March to the Arch, down on the rail with Patrick Husbands for Mrs. Weber and Gary Barber's War of Will, who was pointed for this literally minutes after the win. And I'm going to completely draw a blank, not remembering what it was. The Makers. There we go. The Makers. And of course, they've switched it back to the Makers Mark after the Makers 46. And so the Makers Mark win, making him a Grade 1 winner on both turf and dirt. Not so bad. So the intention was always from July to point to the Woodbine Mile. So War of Will. And actually, Gary Barber has also got that Olympic runner in here who's not bad. He's going to stretch out a little bit more of a sprinter, the 4-year-old gelding, the Giaponte gelding. And coming off of a nice second chasing home Pink Lloyd. Everybody has nice seconds chasing home Pink Lloyd. That's all anybody has is seconds to Pink Lloyd for the most part. Chad Brown and Chad's got, you know, Chad's got he's kind of moving horses around like knights on the chessboard. He's got the opportunity in here with Value Proposition. And then on Sunday, we're also going to ask with Ron Gierkink, and I think Scully looked at it too. You got the Natalma and the Summer Stakes on Sunday at Woodbine. So it's more than just Woodbine Mile Day to look forward to. And two nice fields, and these are always important, the two Grade Ones for boys and girls. The Summer goes as the 7th, 4:30, and the Natalma, 5:35. For the Phillies. And nice eclectic group. Woodbine and Saratoga and Gulfstream Shippers. Same thing in the Summer. And in here, Chad's got that first out winner for Peter Brandt and Bob LaPenta and partners. That Secret Potion. That not a first out winner, actually, I should say. The just got beat by American Monarch of Mott's at Saratoga. Early in August. The Summer is very good. Boys race. Very interesting group. So lots of Woodbine stuff to talk about. And don't forget, there is the combination Woodbine, Monmouth, Belmont pick five, cross country pick five, with the two stakes from Woodbine and two from Belmont. In fact, I got the list right here. I'll tell you. And Case, we could reach for Dave Grenig as I pull this up. Where is it? Here we go. The It starts with the Belmont Seventh, a maiden special, then goes to Woodbine for the Singspiel, then a starter handicap at Monmouth, then the Belmont Ninth, an allowance, and then it ends with the Woodbine Mile. So an all-turf cross-country pick five, and I don't think weather is an issue at all. So there you go. And, you know, I was looking, I said yesterday, I think I asked Haskin about the Salvatore Mile, and I'm pretty sure that it ended up being on, it was on Sunday, it was scheduled for Sunday all along. I thought maybe that they didn't get a chance to fill or that they pushed it back, but it's the 10th race on Sunday. So FYI, you've got and you got a lot of the some of the usual suspects, including the Brunettis, Val Harbor, now with Greg Sacco for the last couple of starts, and Louis Carvajal in here with Prendini as well. Wind of Change, Amador Sanchez coming out of the Russell Road, just got beat in there. Top Line Growth, Kelly Rubley, Golden Brown, good old Golden Brown, the New Jersey bred for Pat McBurney. And how old is he now? 5 years old, but boy, he's been a steady performer. And making his 24th start, actually. I mentioned Kelly Rubley, Top Line Growth, and Pirates Punch. Pirates Punch, who was bitterly disqualified. Speaking of imprimis and disqualifications, out of the Island win for Grant Forster. And second mention this week for Grant because Blaine Wright, of course, who worked for him. Chad's got valid point in here coming out of the four-star Dave and Jorge Duarte with Name Changer. So nice group in the Salvatore Mile, which is a pretty historic race. I've got to see about, I'm going to look that up. I want to see how many times they've run. Dave Grenning's going to join us next, and then Jessica Martini is going to join us. We'll get the Book 2 recap from Keeneland. And Book 3 starts today at 10 o'clock in about 40 minutes. The other couple of races I wanted to get in before, because if we don't do it now, it won't get done. First of all, from Wednesday night, Wednesday afternoon, we had talked with Bill Downs about the stakes in Indiana, the two Indiana bred races, and I mentioned Gumster Stable, Andy Berg, and I got to get Andy on, maybe next week. He was busy yesterday, so I tabled it. But expect Indy, the 7-year-old mare, she absolutely snapped back with a terrific performance under Manny Esquivel and wins the Richmond, beat turned back Unbridled Class, caught, and then Unbridled Class dug in. But Esquivel and expect Indy. Andy Berg claimed this mare as a 5-year-old at Laurel for $7,500. She's made $300,000 since. Pretty clever. Sent her back to Indiana. She's an Indiana bred, and she's won this race now. She actually retires the trophy. I wonder if they're going to just send, three straight wins, retire the trophy. And then Unbridled Beast was too good in the boys' race, in the Gus Grissom. The Unbridled Express Gelding and Rodney Prescott for Randy Matthews. Cipriano Contreras trains. Expect Indy. So I wanted to slip that in. And then last night, saying goodbye to the Canterbury season. And speaking of other jocks we just mentioned, Manny Esquivel. Well, how about another guy that had a cup of coffee in New York? Arrieta. And Francisco Arrieta sweeps the two stakes last night. The Shakopee Juvenile for you and McLean Robinson. Mac sending out for you and for Greg Irwin. Heartful of Soul won nicely. Second choice, 5-2. And then King of the Court, read by Bruce Lunsford and Hill and Dale, Spitestown Gelding, for group of owners, Gary Kropp, Clayton Weist, and Rick Weist, and Robertino Diodoro. So things are wrapped up at Canterbury. They had a very good summer. They finished strong, $2 million handle last night. And, of course, they had to send you home with a pick five. Going into the nightcap, it had been pretty straightforward. And then, sure enough, a 16-1 shot, Devil Vision, for Clinton Stewart with Kelsey Haar. So the final pick five of the season, $2,311. So really fun to follow Canterbury this year. And following Canterbury's recap, Dave Grenig. Happy New Year, Dave. I appreciate it. And I did start the show because I am a little bit a little fakocked here because I've been cooking. I got the brisket going, getting started. I've got I made a barley salad for Tina that she loves, and I got the kugel assembled, etc.
Oh, wow.
So we're ready. But the important question everybody wants to know: what is Beth's favorite, or what's your favorite holiday specialty by Beth?
The brisket is good. In fact, I think the brisket's already made. It just needs to be heated up.
Well, and you know what? See, Dave and Beth, they just revealed one of the great secrets about a brisket. Always better. You cook it a day ahead, and then you let it set, and then you reheat it. And it falls apart like butter. Like it melts in your mouth. Noodle kugel or potato kugel?
I'm a noodle one, but I don't think we're getting any. I don't think I'm getting any of that.
All right. I'm going to send Beth on Facebook. I'll send her my noodle kugel, my three cheese noodle kugel that I've co-opted from. I've co-opted it from Gladdy Peck in Manchester, Connecticut. One of the all-time great kugels. Happy, healthy to everybody. Everybody in Merrick, including Siaka, have we bar mitzvahed Gary yet?
You know what? Siaka and I have not crossed paths in Merrick just yet.
Well, I don't know if that's a surprise or not. that's great. Well, you'll cross paths with him at the training track. That's for sure.
There you go. I just saw him earlier this morning.
Well, and Gary moving into that new barn which is, has he started? Has he? I haven't been down.
Oh, yet, I didn't know that. Oh, has he?
Yeah.
I have my barn list. Let me see if he used to be
61,
right? Or was he 59?
The old barn was the barn 50, I think, right?
I think it was 59. Now, I think it's 60, so I think that's the same one he's been in.
But it is, but he's going to be moving.
He's moving.
He's going to be moving and into Gullo's old barn.
Oh, okay. That'll work.
Yeah. And
Gullo's old barn was Jacobson's old barn, right?
Was it? The one right across from Serpy?
Oh, no, that's Cox's. That's Brad Cox's. Where Brad Cox's. No, I thought Gullo moved when... it says no. Nobody wants to.
Well, there we go. So now that we've played musical barns, Dave, the meet starts today, and I tell you, every indication is that we're gonna have a good meet. Based on all the maidens that gotta get attention yet, and all the Breeders' Cup prep challenge races, feels like it's gonna be a good couple of months.
I think so. I'm not. I think what you're going to see here, what Belmont will benefit from, might be it's a late start that a lot of guys got with their 2-year-olds. So I do think we might see more important 2-year-old races. Now we always have them here, but there might be more of them so this year because I think a lot of the guys got off. Were behind getting their 2-year-olds prepared for Saratoga, and I think that'll just bode well for Belmont. Obviously, weather's always key because they want to do as much grass racing as they can do here. And just looking at the first week forecast, so this weekend through next weekend looks to be very good. So, you know, 5-6 turf races a day, and I would imagine every single one of them, at least for the first 7 days of the meet, will be on the grass. Yes. And then, as you said, we get to the Breeders' Cup preps, which I mean, I guess sort of start next weekend with the Bossberg, which is just going to be, you know, early indications are it's going to be volatile against very few. So he'll cement his status as the favorite for the Breeders' Cup sprint with probably a waltz in the park in the Bossberg. And then you get to the October 3rd races and then October 10th races. I think over 17 of our 22 graded stakes are being run between October 3rd and October 12th. So that's sort of the meat on the bone, so to speak, of the season.
And I'm just pulling it up to give everybody... because there is the opportunity. I had Pat McKenna the other day, and I need you to weigh in on the big controversy too, Dave. The schedule today, we got the little miners mark. It's funny, earlier I just referenced the maker's mark and War of Will. But after the Belmont Oaks tomorrow, you mentioned the Vosburgh, also the Noble Damsel next week. Then we get a couple of New York bred types and the Belmont Derby, which will be October 3rd. And the Gallant Bloom, the Joe Hirsch, the Kelso, and the Pilgrim all on that Saturday the 3rd. Sunday the 4th, the Beldame, the Turf Sprint Invitational, the Miss Grillo for the two-year-old fillies, and then the Champagne Flower Bowl for Zet, Jockey Club Gold Cup, and Sands Point, Saturday, October 10th, 4 weeks out from the Breeders' Cup and the revamped Futurity and Matron. New life was breathed into both, moving them to the turf. And then the Hill Prince, even, on Columbus Day, and the Knickerbocker as well. So nice, very nice stake schedule week after week.
Right, I think there's going to be two issues with the stakes program here, and I think you've already seen it with five horses today and five horses tomorrow, in a grade one tomorrow. You had, coming off the Kentucky Downs meet, which had lucrative purses, we're not out of the COVID woods yet in many respects, and stakes purses, for our conversation here, racing, are taking a hit. You have the Jockey Club Gold Cup, same pot as the Pimlico Special. You know, I understand one's a grade one, one's a grade three, but it's still, there's going to be too many races and not enough horses in that older male division. So you're going to have the Awesome Again. It sounds like Baffert might be keeping his big guns out there. You have the Fayette and Keeneland. Then you have the Pimlico Special and the Jockey Club Gold Cup. You know, too many races, not enough horses. Then the Preakness mixed in there for the three-year-olds. I really think that it's too many, you know, people are going to, you know, the social media people will just be bitching and moaning about, you know, well, the Jockey Club Gold Cup's going to have five horse field, because aside from Tacitus and the Bond horse, whose name just escaped and prioritized, I couldn't tell you anyone else is pointing for that race right now. It's funny, I texted, you know, I keep reading about what Kenny McPeak wants to do with that filly. You know, he's looking at the Preakness, looking at the Queen Elizabeth, I texted him, I said, why don't you look at the Jockey Club Gold Cup? I got two horses in the race. And he said, what do you do, working for Panza now? I said, he needs all the help he can get. But to me, how cool would that look on a resume, you know, down the road? A victory, a three-year-old filly winning the Jockey Club Gold Cup. She loved a mile and a quarter. If Tacitus is the horse you have to beat, I'm not, you know, I like Tacitus, but he's no, you know, he doesn't necessarily. I like Tacitus more than Tacitus likes to win. So to me, I think that might be an interesting look on the resume, so to speak. And then when you send her to be sold or whatever they're going to do with her at the time, you know, they can say she's the first three-year-old filly to win the Jockey Club Gold Cup, or she's the first three-year-old filly to win the Jockey Club Gold Cup since, you know, somebody will go back in history books and tweet it out in 20 minutes. But anyway, I just think my basic point is that the stakes program, because of the purse cuts, I think that it's going to be a little bit light. I don't think today and tomorrow are the last five horse fields you're going to see.
No, I mean, and it's been a, you know, frustratingly from that standpoint. You know, this is not a new phenomenon, and you do bring up the Jermaine point. I, by the way, I would guess that Shuvie, although I don't know if she, I don't think she did it as a 3-year-old, but Shuvie, I think, is probably the last filly that won the Gold Cup, yeah, right?
And look, I'm not sure they're even thinking about it. I just, to me, it would look like an interesting, you know, because of the distance and because of the prestige of the race and how it would look in some catalog page on some, you know, down the road. To me, it's kind of an interesting thought. They may not think so. I bet you, what I should have done is I should have texted Peter Callahan. Peter Callahan might have given me back a more interesting answer, like, that sounds like an interesting idea.
It is an interesting idea. It absolutely is. Well, let's talk a little bit about what it lies ahead, and then some of the news stories that you worked on this week, because you've been churning stuff out on a regular basis. And as part of your advance on tomorrow's Belmont Oaks, how good do we think this Magic Attitude is?
I don't know if it's a feeling that I think she's really good, as opposed to I just think the field is really average. And the only thing I have to go by with Magic Attitude is the company she's kept. And it seems like that French Oaks in July really produced a lot of next out winners or second out or two after winners or horses that ran well in Group 1 races in Europe. And to me, I just think that signifies to me that those are better. She's been dealing with better quality horses than what she meets here. On the other side is who's running with Antoinette in this spot. And if Antoinette's the type of filly that gets brave on the lead, as her connections indicate, then she may be tough to pass. Because Magic Attitude, I did see the video of her last two races, and when she was second in the St. Hilaire in June, she was a bit ranked being that close to the pace. I think she preferred being covered up like she was and off the pace in the French Oaks, and she came with a mild bid. I wouldn't say it was an electric turn of foot, but it was she ran well. And the four horses that finished ahead of her have all come back to run very well subsequently. So it's not a theory that I think Magic Attitude is this next European superstar coming to the U.S. I just think she's good enough to compete in this field of horses that I just don't have a great affinity for. Was that diplomatic enough?
sort of. No, it's a fair point about Antoinette. And I suppose, you know, I ran down the field earlier, just kind of setting the table for the weekend's highlights. And the more I looked at Key Biscayne, the more impressed I was with her steady development. Would have to take another step forward. You also have got second North America, Leonard Powell, shipping across the country for this spot. And, seems like a bold maneuver. I don't know if Sol Kumin's involvement has anything to do with it. But Neige Blanche, Snow White, I think for a five pack, they've all got some merits, this group, I think.
If you can make the case for setting the mood, I'd like to hear it, because I can't. And the other ones, again, I think the reason you think they have merit is because you don't think that, you know, in your heart of hearts, soul of souls, you don't think that highly of the group as a whole, because they're just average. It's just an average group, Steve. And if you said this was a grade one race, I think people would snicker. Oh, it is a great one, right? But I think there might be some snickering here. I'm actually hoping Magic Attitude turns out to be, you know, a good horse, because just because I think it would help the race. I just don't think the other ones are just. I think the other ones all belong with each other. And if you made this the Pebbles, you'd be like, oh, that's nice. That's a nice Pebbles, but it's not a nice Pebbles.
What else can we highlight about this group? We do have a couple of maiden races that might produce, you know, something. We've got a mile for the boys as the sixth race, and then a mile on the turf for the fillies as the seventh.
Yes, the sixth race. Let me just get that here. So we've got third time out, Repo Rocks for Mott, who, by the way, Mott is on quite the run the last two or three weeks. In fact, he won with another first-time starter yesterday.
Yep.
So if I was updating my story, that appears in the Saturday form of he was 11 for 43 since August, whatever, 29th. He's now 12 for 44, and he's winning everywhere. He's got like six tracks on his resume there that he's winning at, and so that barn is just a great great gun. The Curlin Colt for Todd by Rama has been working very well. Worked very well in Saratoga. Known agenda, and it's part of a an entry though with a horse that just got beat first time out of 3-1 likable. So that seems like a solid race. These are the types of races that I think that you'll see more of this meet. You've got two Chads, one the $900,000 Flatter, who was second to the highly regarded Calibrate first time out at Saratoga. And then he's got another first-time starter in here by Candy Ride, Rational Choice, who's has had a couple of good works up there in Saratoga. So at this, I think this is the type of race you're going to see more of this this fall, because of everyone was late with the two-year-olds. But I think the Don't Agenda, the Curlin Colt, could be really nice. It looks like we've sort of seen. Well, I guess you got another one of those in the seventh race. You got another one of those Chad Brown Klarovich horses that they bought over in Europe, a Kingman Philly amortization, who probably bears watching. And then you have Toner's got this Tapazar Philly, who's got a steady stream of works off too, a Magical Charm. And then Chubb with Island Treasure, Spike Town Philly's out of Fitted Rich.
Well, as it happens, Island Treasure. You bring up Island Treasure, and the sibling runs today. Windfall Profit.
There you go. Even Barclays Philly's out of that Caroline Thomas, Carrie Girl.
For Bonner Young.
For the Youngs, yes. So good, solid main races. Again, I think that might be the hallmark of the meet, to be honest with you. More so than the Stakes Program.
Which is fine.
That's perfectly fine.
You know, Mark Hennig, the Hennig runner for Lee Lewis, that the Pioneer of the Nile filly, she's a half to Maniwa, who is a nice competitive Catman has. That name kind of jumped off at me, and there was another pedigree tie-in. Dunk. The Dunk with that Lily Simone. And of course, Dunk, who had a very good Saratoga. That hard spun filly is a half to Vision Perfect, who won a hat full of turf stakes.
Yeah. It's a good race, and I'm sure Mike Welsh's Crocker Report will have lots of insights into where to go in those races.
We're gonna have Mike Welsh later. He'll be reporting from the smoldering remains of Green Mountain.
Oh yes, he was a bit upset about that yesterday. So a bit of his childhood, if you can remember it.
It's childhood.
Was there at the Green Mountain? So yes, I'm sure. In fact, he actually probably had some losing and or winning tickets left in a drawer in the press box up there. That's probably are smoldering embers. No, but that was a shame.
It's awful. And I did see today the story in the Bennington Banner as kind of expected, suspicious origins. The place is empty, obviously,
right.
And there is security. I made the mention. I sent out a link to the YouTube video of the two Urbex explorers that have a video, half-hour video of them sneaking in and going around the building. And when I tried to show it to Tina, she and I had a very successful trip to Great Barrington. And then I tried to show her Green Mountain, and they swooped in on us as if I was Aaron Brockovich taking water samples.
I don't know. That security guard is out of work.
Yeah, exactly. The security failed us. Sunday?
Sunday, believe it or not, Sunday is the first day of New York of racing since it returned in New York in June that there was not a scheduled stakes race.
How about that
For your future? Now there have been days when stakes races didn't fill and we didn't have. There's a couple of decent, like I said, the weather's going to help out. A couple of interesting turf allowance races here. One in the ninth race is the two other than. kept true for Leah is trying to turf for the first time. And the only thing that interests me is that I don't see a whole lot of speed in this field. And her weapon, to me, is her speed. And she's got Kendrick aboard, so no, you know, from Dylan Davis to Kendrick Carmichael. So I think the you know, the die is cast and what their method is going to be here, and just going to let her run out, run out of there. I don't know if she's good enough, but she might be a price, and you'll have a gauge of about a dozen, you know, 10 or 11 turf races run at the meet by the time that one runs, and if it looks like speed is pretty good, you know, I would I'd give her a little bit of a look. You know, and she'll be a price. You got a couple of Chads in there with Olin Dong. You have a couple of Phil Serpys in there, Tipple, who's won two in a row, and one that he's has been turned over. Interesting, an 8-year-old mare, Sister Sophia, who hasn't run in almost 2 years, going from Georgie Abreu to Phil Serpys. Clement's got a horse called Madeline Must, who was running longer distances than this, but does get Rosario, who everybody seems to love in a turf sprint. But, you know, look, Chad will probably be the one to beat with Olin Don, but Kep True looks a little bit interesting to me as a speed play. And what else we added there? Right before that, there's an A of the Then, where Chad looks to have that one under a barrel, although there's a lot more speed in this one. He's got the Philly, Gelsey French Reeves in that spot. Mark Cassie is probably happy to see the numbers flip over from the last meet. Has Wild Medallia Doro, whose lone win recently came at Belmont, lone win at Belmont was the maiden race here, going a mile 16th in May of 19. Now he's trying to shorten up to 6 furlongs. So, and then Phil Gleaves, who had quietly had a nice meet in Saratoga, brings back Yes and Yes off a you know, solid starter allowance win going 7/8 through June 27th. So it's a couple, you know, there's no stake, but it's a couple decent allowance races that you know, are handicapping puzzles, no question.
Nice. Well, let me also get in a couple of licks on stories that you worked on this week, including some targeting and opportunities. And I was a little surprised yesterday, Dave, when you put up the story about Mike Trombetta and Mrs. Weber's win-win-win, because after the forego, Charlotte indicated to me anyway that she thought that maybe put him away for, you know, for the season and you know, point to a campaign next year. She thought he had done enough for the season. So Trombetta telling you, though, that now they feel like they'll train up to the dirt mile.
Yeah, I don't know that I got the sense from Trombetta, or even, you know, I know Mike Welsh had dealt with Trombetta after, before and after the forego, about that would be it. Yeah, I mean, they did that last year, and it took them almost a year to get back to the races, and I'm not so sure that when you have horses in form like that, to stop on him for a second straight year, I think, wouldn't be ideal. So why not train him as if you're going to run on the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile? And if he's doing what, you know, I guess under those sort of the purview that he'd have to be doing really well to run. And if Trombetta indicates to Miss Weber that, you know, he's not, then they won't. But I would think that there's no reason, coming off that race, give him plenty of time, take your one shot in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile on a track that he did run well at two turns last year at the Bluegrass. He was second to Vekoma, who I'm not 100% sure we see Vekoma again this year, but that's just a gut feeling, nothing based on any more than that. But I mean, off that performance, why not take a shot in the Dirt Mile? I thought there might be some thought about the sprint, but even he said, look, I just don't think this guy's going to get 3/4. And when you look at the sprint, potential sprint field, you know, it could be really loaded, especially the, you know, just take the Asmussen barn, put it, I even suggested have a Breeders' Cup sprint for Asmussen and then have one for everybody else. Give somebody else a chance. But I think the Dirt Mile's a good race to point for. And if they didn't do that, I would think that the Cigar Mile would have been a very good race to point for as well. Again, I wonder if the Cigar Mile, and it remains to be seen, obviously, if it gets hurt by the reduction in purse to 250. You know, that's a race that people are always a little bit hemming and hawing on anyway. But when they get, you know, when it's 750 or 500, that tilted them toward the race. Now at 250, you know, do you think, I could maybe catch one of those in, you know, next year? We'll see down the road. But I thought that would be a perfect race for him as well if they didn't want to do the Breeders' Cup. But I think we'll see him again. I mean, he breathed already once back. He breathed a half in, slow half in Tapita at 51. So I think their intention is to give at least one more shot this year.
Another name added to the Preakness probable list, talk about Jorge Abreu and live your beast life.
Yeah, they mentioned this after the Jim Dandy, Abreu, and I did speak to William Lawrence about the prospects of the Preakness, and I know he's not nominated, Triple Crown nominated, so he has to supplement. But those supplemental fees are a lot less egregious this year than in previous years. I think it's $25,000. Not that it's a small change, but it's not like it could be. Usually they're six figures, and I guess they want to take a shot at it. See, there's a horse that, why not also nominate to the Jockey Club Gold Cup and see if it's going to come up a four or five horse field. And the key why they want to run in these races, or a race like the Preakness, is the distance. They think that the horse wants to go a distance of ground. Well, if he wants to go a mile 3/16, you got to think he wants to go a mile and a quarter as well. So why run again? If the Preakness gets a dozen, they're saying, I don't know what it's going to get. And this race gets four or five, it looks kind of interesting to me, but again, you're talking about $1 million versus $250. So I don't know what, but the horse breathed nicely yesterday. It's faster than he has breathed in the past, and his last two races are good. And look, why not? If you want to take a swing, this is the year to take a swing.
Fair enough. Anybody else from the New York based types, Dr. Post and Happy Saver, Todd's status?
I haven't seen Todd. I believe he's still at the sale. Last I spoke to him about Dr. Post is they were going to slap some blinkers on him and see how that worked, see if it woke him up a bit in his training. Not that he was training poorly, but they want to see what impact it might have on him before they make any final decisions on the Preakness. I believe Happy Saber, having earned an automatic berth in the race, will go. My guess is he could show back up on the work tab this week, probably next week. I guess maybe just have the one breeze going into it. I guess there's a chance he could work this weekend. But, I could see, I would see him going. Anyone else from here? Unless I'm forgetting someone, I don't think so. And, my gut instinct tells me Tis the Law will not run in that race. Obviously, I'm not making those decisions, but if the people that are making those decisions are seeing what I've been seeing this last few days, they will not entertain the idea of the Preakness.
That actually, from every indication, and Robin Smulin was actually, I thought, pretty frank about, and Barkley were very frank about how they feel he's come out of Derby.
This isn't like trying to find something that's not there. This is a legitimate, I want to use it's observations, right? You watch how he's come out of his races, all those races this year. A lot of energy, wanting to gallop, wanting to train, and I don't think they see that. In the couple days that I've watched this week, I haven't seen that either. So there's no reason to rush back in 4 weeks, and you can take your time and see if he gets. See if he gets back that energy and that want to, and point like you're going to run in the Breeders' Cup, and if he doesn't turn around, then you can pull the plug then too. I mean, you've got to do what's right by the horse, and Barkley Tag's going to do what's right by the horse. So
yeah, no doubt.
When you see him on the work tab, when you see him in a race, you know that he's doing well.
Exactly. All right. Well, we will monitor those. But we appreciated the addition of Live Your Beast Life. Right now, we've got Authentic, Thousand Words, Pneumatic, Dr. Post, Art Collector, King Guillermo, Mystic Guide, Finnick the Fierce. Maybe this horse from Western Canada, Mongolian Wind, Lebda for Claudio Gonzalez, Happy Saver, and Live Your Beast Life. So two.
Yeah, I thought I read Finnick the Fierce is not. Going
no good.
Maybe I thought I read somewhere where he still needs a bit more time. So
all right,
we'll see where it goes. But I mean, look, I guess the most interesting one is if Art Collector can get there. He would have been obviously the second choice in the Kentucky Derby, second or third choice in the Kentucky Derby, and missed it obviously within a little issue. If he can get back there, that would be good. I'd like to see that horse roll.
I'm sure there'll be others, names to bubble to the surface. It's so weird to have this much time. You know, you finish Derby and you're you know, mentally.
See tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
See tomorrow.
Exactly. 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 You're not going down though, right? Marty's coming in.
Correct. I will be. I missed my first Derby, and now I'm missing my second straight Preakness. So believe me, next year I'll be. You know, next spring I'll be have crab cakes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I love it. So Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig. And we will see you soon enough, Dave, down there. I'm really looking forward to cutting down there.
All right, Steve. Thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
I appreciate it. Happy, healthy to the Grenigs. And we've got a case. I'm not sure if you reached for Jessica yet. Okay, you're going to call her now? All right. So we'll get Jessica Martini in here for our report on the sale. Let me reach for the sales tallies from yesterday. And seven-figure, there was, in fact, a seven-figure seller. I know I printed it. Where did it go? I also do see that Ron Gierking, who will join us right after Jessica, he got the decision from Barbara Mitchell. She's running Admiralty Pier in the Woodbine Mile. So there will be eight. There's the sales tally. I want to mention, as we wait for Jessica, if you didn't see the, and in fact, it was in TDN, where the story first came to the surface. We had that conversation with Bob Hutton on Wednesday about the situation in Arizona. And Turf Paradise Management, specifically Vince Francia, with the most disingenuous response to the situation. Now suddenly, Turf Paradise, now that the $2 million has been set aside, now suddenly they're concerned about the horsemen in Arizona. Now suddenly, I guess COVID's not a problem either anymore, suddenly. I mean, as phony as a $3 bill, they say, oh, we do want to run. Oh, but we want that money back, and we want the HBPA to dissolve. These people are beyond description. At Turf Paradise. Incredible. Just incredible. There's not going to be a different horsemen's organization. HBPA is the fully accredited representative of the horsemen in Arizona. That's not going to change. And Bob Hutton's not going away. Neither is Leroy Gestman. They'll be around. No matter what happens in Arizona. I mean, this, if you didn't see, you got to read this. You want to read a bunch of completely bald-faced, disingenuous crap. Read this stuff from Turf Paradise, quote-unquote, management. I am really amazing that they would think anybody would be taken in by that. Amazing. They're getting ready to read the terms of condition at Keeneland and get the start of book three in. Jessica Martini, who we didn't get a chance to talk to late last week from the TDN, and going to get her take on how things transpired. Book two wrapped up yesterday with a million-dollar Into Mischief colt that Peter Lytle bought. This is a Stone Street bred and raised, and, of course, Teen Pauline, the lovely race runner of her own accord, and Broodmare producing this colt. That was the top seller. And then, you know, nice variety after that. Into Mischief just really driving the train in a big way. How about $675,000 colt, Shadwell, who's really gotten very nice, steady drumbeat now of buys. And that was HIP 880, 675,000. And Bella Jolie, that's a half to Bella Jolie is Run Happy's Dam, right? I'm pretty sure. So that's a half to Into Mischief to Run Happy. Then there was the Into Mischief for 600,000, Spendthrift and My Racehorse. Bought the one bred by Kingswood Farm, David Egan, 600. Malibu Moon. The top filly was a Constitution that Solis and Lit, 725,000 out of Candy Fortune. And what else? Another couple of Into Mischiefs, 500,000 filly, HIP 1147, and then one for 475, Breeze Easy, that Woodford produced. Wow. Lord Nelson, here's an interesting, and I'm anxious to hear Jessica's take. Casey's having circuit issues reaching Kentucky. And Lord Nelson, a $460,000 colt out of Reina Maria, this bred by Mulholland Springs, and Frank Fletcher, teaming up with 10 Strike, with Clay and Marshall. How about that? How about that? Seth Klarman, supporting Practical Joke, bought a $400,000 colt as well, bred by Bill Lynn and Jeff Teresa and Marilyn Little. Practical Joke out of Vita's sister, 971. HIP 971. What else? There's some... Curlin Shadwell bought a Stone Street bred colt out of Catch the Moon. West Point with a Candy Ride colt, 575. And Mastery with a $510,000 seller. How about that? That's a nice number. So the first crop stallions starting to, you know, creep in, you know, today, you know, book three and book four, the next 4 days will be, you know, very notable. This is now the section of the sale where we'll start to see some trends, I think, when it comes to the new sires. I can tell Case is having phone trouble, or at least can't reach Jess. So you know what? Top of the hour's here. Let's take a break, and Case, we'll do that. We'll take a break, get the top of the hour in. Might as well do that. And we'll come back, and we got Ron Gierkink. Start talking about Woodbine. James Scully's going to join us. We'll see if we can't raise Jessica. We've got Nick Tamaro, top of hour three. Do some handicapping, Belmont, and Mike Welch as well. 2 hours ahead at the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
World's only accredited equine business program.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
If you are racing 2-year-olds in California, Kentucky, Breeder Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880. Serious.